change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up, cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Pod Skewy. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm M Bone.
M Bone? What's this? Are you giving yourself your own nickname or did someone bestow that upon you?
Well, when I was a younger child, they used to call me, in their like grade school, they called me M Bone. But it's just because we watched the episode of Seinfeld with the T-Bone. Hey, T-Bone. Remember? Anyways, I'm sorry.
I absolutely do remember. He's like, yeah, you can't be T-Bone. You have to be G-Bone. You could be G-Spot. Yeah. That's a myth. And at the time, I was like, I don't really understand what that is. I know what that means now.
Still don't. No.
I feel bad.
No, didn't they call him Coco the Monkey?
He did become Coco the Monkey. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Oh.
Really? Podcast.
So, yeah, we're going to turn this into a Seinfeld podcast and not talk about any CFL news. If everyone's down with that, I'm down with that.
I love Seinfeld. So, except for the first couple of seasons, we're kind of meh. But after that,
it's
gold,
much like,
Jerry.
It's gold. Like The Simpsons, right? Like the... That first season of The Simpsons, you watch it and you're like, Bart's cutting the heads off statues and there's like morals of the story and it's like, nah, this is not what's good. And then you get into like seasons 2 and 3 and then it's like,
even
oh, that's The Simpsons. Kinda, yeah, 2's okay, but like once you get into season, like season 3 to season 9, just fantastic.
I concur.
What is this show about again? Are we supposed to talk about football? Oh. Is that what we're here for?
I thought Seinfeld was about nothing, wasn't it?
Seinfeld was about nothing, and I guess our podcast is kind of about nothing.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
All right, well, let's get into the nothingness.
Yeah, let's get into it, because there was a lot of nothingness. We've got the draft to cover. There was a big signing by the team. There were some cuts by the team. A legend retired from the CFL. The CBA is still – we got to talk about that because that's twisting and turning, and that's like a bloody episode of, I don't know, some like Sopranos or something with all the weird turns that thing's taken. Lost, that's perfect. How are you nailing the pop culture references and I'm sitting here with my thumb up my ass not knowing what to say? God, this is, are we in Bizarro Land or something?
Did you watch Lost?
Of course I watched Lost.
Ah, the last season sucked.
Okay, you know what?
Okay, I'm sorry.
We could get into this. Enough pop culture stuff, although I very much enjoy this, don't get me wrong. The biggest news, though, that we have to talk about comes from Ty Cats Land, and this kind of came out of nowhere. Monday, June Jones stepped down as the team's offensive coordinator to take a job with the Houston XFL franchise as their head coach, and he was replaced by none other than Tommy Condell, who was, I believe, the team's quarterback coach before this promotion happened. I can't exactly remember what his title was.
Receivers coach, I think.
Maybe receivers coach. He was on the coaching staff nonetheless. He'd returned from a couple years with the Argos. He was back here. This kind of took everyone by surprise. It didn't take the team by surprise. I know that they knew this was coming. They knew at some point, from what I've been told, that they expected Jones to leave after this season, and Condell would replace him in 2020. So they had this whole succession plan has been put in place since Condell came back to the Ticats. So this took no one in the Ticats offices by surprise. But Mike, did it take you by surprise?
It did take me by surprise, especially, you know, this close to training camp. It's if we didn't have, like you mentioned, the succession plan, if we didn't have Tommy Condell, you know, waiting in the wings, then we'd be in some deep trouble. But since we do have a coach that has been an OC before, in Hamilton and had a lot of success the years he was here, I'm not too worried about it. But I will miss June Jones a bit. You know, he really lit this offense on fire. And after the Ken Austin debacle of a couple of years ago, he really turned this team around. And, you know, I just like him as a never met the guy, but he just seems like a genuine, nice person. So, you know, I enjoyed watching his press conferences and all that stuff, and his offense was amazing. He will be missed, but I'm not too worried.
He was refreshingly honest. When they asked him a question, even if it was to the detriment of the team, like we all remember last training camp when he said, we're going to trade Vernon Adams, and we've got it down between two teams. And then I guess that's – he was – I think he even mentioned that it was Edmonton and Montreal. Like, he was, like, just totally open about that. And then obviously they couldn't make a trade, so they ended up cutting Adams. He went and signed with Montreal anyway. And, yeah, that might have hurt the team in acquiring a draft pick or a player or whatever. But hearing him interviewed and seeing him at his press conferences where he would just honestly answer the questions that the reporters asked him – it's so different from what you see from a lot of coaches, especially head coaches, especially at the professional level, where they're so secretive and they're like, they kind of play these games where they don't want you to know what's going on. Like Bill Belichick's obviously the master at it. Nick Saban does it as well. We've even seen it in the CFL with guys like Chris Jones, who are like not as forthcoming as June Jones was. He was just an open book. You ask him a question, he would answer it. From all the people I know that interacted with him, whether they were covering a team or whatnot, they echo what you said, Mike, that he was just a nice, honest, open, friendly man who loved to talk about football. Like, he's a football lifer. He's pushing 70 years old. He doesn't need to still be doing this. He's been a successful head coach at the NCAA level. He's been a somewhat successful head coach at the professional level. He's doing this for fun. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to be a bummer to see him go. What he it was able to accomplish in a year and a half as both head coach and offensive coordinator of this team. The offense was exciting to watch. It created stars out of Jeremiah Mazzoli and Brandon Banks. Maybe we don't see those guys reach where they are now if not for June Jones taking over as head coach. So it was a very short era for the Ticats, but I feel like it was a necessary one. It's that bridge, I think, that'll take us from Austin to Steinhauer. And I think he set up a lot of good things on his way out the door. Like I said, are Jeremiah Mazzoli and Brandon Banks the players they are now, if not for June Jones? I don't think they are.
I don't think they get the chance at all, really. Yeah. I mean, as soon as he came in, he was like, Banks is my guy. He's going to play on offense all the time. And just look at him now. Yeah, he obviously has a great eye for talent. Do you have any worries about, you know, all these players on the offensive side of the ball are, you know, they're short. Like the receivers are meant for the run and shoot offense. Do you think that will be a concern going into the season with a new offensive coordinator? Do you think he'll tinker a lot with the offense, or will it basically, you know, be the same?
My gut reaction when I heard the news was, oh man, what does this mean for everybody? Like, what does this mean for Mazzoli? What does this mean for Banks and Tasker and Saunders and Addison? And then I go, well, wait a second. Kondell was here with Banks and with – now, not with Banks as a receiver, but I think anyone, any coach who took over for Jones at any point has to recognize that Brandon Banks is in the top three receivers in the CFL right now. Like, it's – you – however you looked at him, like we'll use Tommy Kondell as an example here. However Kondell looked at him – those years he was in Hamilton before, he has to look at him with a fresh set of eyes now and realize that he is something more than what he was when Kondell was here last. So I'm a little concerned about Banks just because he hasn't really had a chance to work in an offense outside of Jones's. But Mazzoli put up some pretty impressive numbers. Like, what people seem to forget is in 2015 and 2016, now Kondell was gone by 2016 when Mazzoli started those first six games when Zach Caleros was hurt, but Kondell's offense and Austin's offense are pretty much synonymous with one another. Mazzoli's operated in this offense and operated at a high level. Let's not forget the 2015 East Final where, I'll say this till I'm blue in the face, he outperformed Henry Burris. His numbers were better. He had a phenomenal game. Brought a team that was like, had the best quarterback in the CFL and lost him and had them on the precipice. They are a dropped interception away from going to a third straight Grey Cup, quite frankly. And that Bank Street Miracle never happens if Arnaud Gascon-Nadon catches that damn pass that Burris hit him right in the chest with. So, I'm sorry. I don't want to bring up a bad time. But I'm just saying, to kind of bring the point home, Mazzoli's operated in a Kondell offense and done it at a high level. So, I was worried initially, but having thought about it, I'm less worried now. I will say, however, that I was super confident in the Tie Cats being a Grey Cup contender going into the season before Jones stepped down. I'm a little less confident in that now. The East Division is still obviously not very good, and there's you look at Toronto, you look at Montreal, you look at Ottawa, there's definitely some upheaval there. You don't really know what to expect from those teams. We kind of knew what to expect from Hamilton with there being sort of a lot of continuity from last year to this year. So I was very, very confident that this was a Grey Cup team. I'm a little less so now. That's probably where I stand. Like not yeah. much, but a little less so.
That's fair. I mean, Tommy Condell is a smart guy, right? He's not gonna mess around too much. If he looks at that offense from last year and sees all the success that they had, you know, obviously there's gonna be his wrinkles in there, but I don't think that there's going to be any drastic changes. You know, if you look at the production of Banks and guys like Jalen Saunders before he got injured, and obviously we still have Tasker and, you know, Mike Jones and and other guys. Exactly. Yes. And yeah, I don't think he's going to mess around too much. I think he's a smart guy and recognizes that they're familiar with this offense. And I think he'll leave a good chunk of the plays in there.
Are you more, like, when you look at this team now, do you think of them, are you more confident in them being a Grey Cup contender or less confident in them being a Grey Cup contender?
I'm confident they'll be 9-9. I'm pretty confident in that.
That's
all I know.
You're going to die on that hill.
It matters. Either they'll be 9-9 or they'll be 1-17. There's no in between with that. Just doesn't matter, Josh. I don't even know why we're talking about anything, you know?
Why do we even do this show? We should just start talking about Lost and Seinfeld and Simpsons more.
Yeah. Yeah, because we can just predict the end of this, you know, 9-9. Maybe we'll win one playoff game, but, you know. Maybe we'll make it to the Grey Cup. Who knows? But we will be 9-9. Or 8-10.
Or 8-10.
No, I'll stick with 9-9. I'll stick with 9-9.
Yeah, remember how we were talking a few, like, I don't know how many episodes ago it was. We were going to make a bet on, I was going to take over 500, you were going to take 500 or under. I'm probably still going to make the bet with you because I'm a man of my word, and I think that'll be a fun bet. We just got to come up with some stakes. But, man, I'm sitting here going like, oh, do I, because now this starts to feel like a 99 team to me. No, that still might be first in the East, though.
True. You know, 9-9's all right. It's frustrating. It's mediocrity at its finest. But listen, I think that they'll be a good team. I really do. My confidence doesn't really drop that much. It's basically, if it does drop, it's by a very small percentage just because, you know, June Jones being the offensive coordinator, the guys are familiar with him, familiar with his offense, the way he calls plays, all that stuff. But if it drops, it's very small.
Will you remember the June Jones era fondly? I know it was only a year and a half, but will you look back on it? Will you even remember it? Or will this be just kind of a, oh yeah, remember when June Jones coached here? Or will you look back and go, like fondly, take a look back on these 20 some odd games he coached, 25 some odd games he coached, and be happy about it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we were a pretty good team when he was head coach. Now, there was some buffoonery on his part during games, you know, some questionable play calls or questionable calls on the field by June Jones. But overall, I'll remember it as an exciting time to be a Ticats fan, an exciting time to watch this Ticats offense perform on the field. So I think that's how I remember him, not from wins and losses, but just how exciting the offense was.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. He created, well, not created, but he gave a platform for Brandon Banks to become a superstar, to take that next journey in his career, to leap from return specialist to bona fide number one receiver. We've seen a lot of great return specialists in this league, guys like Pinball Clemens, Gizmo Williams, Bashir Levingston comes to mind. Arlan Bruce is really the only one I can think of that kind of went from guy who played special teams really well to stud receiver. Like, that's
Chad Owens.
Chad Owens. I think Chad Owens was always like, you know what? No, that's fair. That's actually fair. Chad Owens had become a pretty reliable. Actually, that's a pretty good basis for Banks too, because Owens was the top special teams player in the league, and then was given a chance on offense. No, you're right, Chad Owens. That's a I can't believe I forgot got that pull, and I'm actually giving Chad Owens some credit here. But no, Chad Owens is actually almost identical to the career trajectory of Brandon Banks. Hopefully Banks has a little bit longer of a career. I think he's only like 31 right now. So hopefully he's got a few more years left in him. But it'll be that, him turning Brandon Banks loose and letting him become the player he became now, and giving Jeremiah Mazzoli a chance to really cement himself as one of the league's top quarterbacks. I know he still has his detractors, and he probably will unless he wins like five straight Grey Cups and becomes the next Warren Moon. But you can't look at the numbers that Mazzoli has put up over the time that Jones was the head coach and not say he's one of the league's best quarterbacks. And that's coming on the heels of this team thinking they had their franchise quarterback in Zach Caleros for a decade, having him kind of peter out, injuries derailed that, his career. Like right now, if you were to ask Rider fans who have Zach Caleros, and I still think Zach Caleros has the capabilities of being a really good quarterback in this league, but if you said to them, hey man, we'll trade you Mazzoli for Caleros one for one, they'd do it in a heartbeat. So the Ticats have one of the league's best quarterbacks in Mazzoli. I'm really curious to see what he can do in this new system. But I think those two things especially are what I'm going to remember June Jones for most, is giving the Ticats two all-star caliber players on the offensive side of the football. So, yeah, I like you, will look back fondly on the June Jones era of Ticats football. And like you, it'll be all about the offense, and it'll be like how exciting it was to watch this team play on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, and it really was. I mean, they really aired the ball out. You know, Banks just gets open and makes big plays. It really was an exciting brand of offensive football.
Yeah, my only concern now, though, is with Condell, are we going to go back to the running the ball six times a game and throwing it 40? Because I didn't like that. No. That's the one aspect of the Austin Condell offense that you and I, how many years did we sit here and just like bang our heads against the desk wishing his team would run the football more when they had a guy like C.J. Gable? June Jones knew that you needed to run the football to be successful, and maybe there were games where he only ran it 10 or 12 times, but, man, there were games where Gable would get, like, seven touches when Austin was in control. So I hope, you know, with Condell working with the Argos and them having – I know you don't like him, but them having a guy like James Wilder Jr., who is a guy that you can feed the football to, I kind of hope that – maybe that's a new part of Condell's offense that we'll see take hold with the Ticats this time around, because I would hate to see that aspect of the offense kind of go away, because for the last couple of years, it really did work really well.
Yeah, you got to have, you know, some kind of balance in there. We can't go back to throwing the ball 50 times a game. And plus, I don't want to talk about it every week. You know what I mean? Like, that's just hopefully there's – I think, you know, Condell and Austin, obviously they – are kind of linked together in Ticats' eyes, but I think there might have been a little bit of a rift there, and maybe, you know, Austin was pushing for, you know, passing the ball more than Condell wanted to, or who knows, but I think that he'll keep the running game in the plans.
So Jones stepping down wasn't the only news from the Ticats over the last couple of weeks. They made some roster moves. The cuts are obviously something we're going to have to get into, but I'd like to talk about the signings. They signed a bunch of players over the last couple of weeks, mostly guys who are going to come into training camp, which opens this weekend. Fingers crossed, hopefully, maybe. We'll talk about the CBA in a bit, but there seems to be some positive signs that we're actually going to get the season to start on time. But the biggest move they made was signing former Toronto Argonaut Dylan Wynn. I think this is, and I wrote this piece for Three Down, an absolutely stellar addition to the defensive line, kind of an under the radar guy who had two really good years with the Argos, was a free agent this year, signed in the AAF, played a couple games down there. Obviously we know what happened down there. They fold. He's free to come back up here, signs with the Ticats. I do wonder if maybe Jim Barker had something to do with this, being that he's now with the Cats, bringing a guy in Wynn over to Hamilton, who he obviously brought to the Argos while he was there. I think he's a guy that Barker had on his neg list at one time before he actually came up when Pop and Trestman were there. But I love this move. I look at Hamilton's, the changes they've made to the defensive line over the offseason. Jamal Westerman's going to be back. Ted Laurent's going to be back. They add Dylan Wynn to pair with Ted Laurent, and then you get Jagera Davis on the other side. This defensive line could harken back, Mike, to the days that we hold fond, those late 90s, early 2000s team with Joe Montford. I love the signing. I love what the Ticats have done with the defensive line. Where do you stand?
I like it as well. You know, you get Laurent and Wynn in the middle. I mean, he's a Canadian, right? Am I crazy?
No.
Or is he?
No,
he's not?
No.
Oh,
I know
crap.
A lot. I feel that question.
I don't know why.
I thought he was too at first, but no, he's an American.
Okay, I was going to say, like, Laurent and Wynn side by side, two Canadians. But either way, the guy's a beast in the middle. And, you know, I think there needed to be some changes on the defensive line. You know, they were a talented bunch last year, but they just didn't get to the quarterback enough, I felt. So, you know, bring in some new blood, some competition in training camp. I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good signing.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the things. I think this team, even though they finished 8-10 and they got blown out in the East Final last year, I think aside from the players they lost, I think this roster needed some tweaks. And I think you bring in a guy like Wynn, who's played for a Grey Cup championship team in the Argos in 2017, and you bring sort of that like championship swagger. Jagger Davis had won the Grey Cup last year with the Stamps. So you bring sort of that like these guys have been there. They've played in the biggest game and they've won it. They kind of know like where they are. Like, you know what I mean? Like they've done it. So they can come when going gets tough. They're like, no, this is what we can do to kind of get over this. And you're right about the Ticats. Like the defensive line last couple of years, like last year, they finished second last in the league in sacks. Like that's like, they only had 31 sacks and Ted Laurent had 8 of them. Like your interior defensive linemen should not be leading the team in sacks. They didn't get much from Jamal Westerman last year because he got hurt and he came over midseason. They didn't get a ton from some of the other guys they had. Justin Cafficotti didn't really light the world on fire. Adrian Tracy had a bit of a down year. But I look at this defensive line and I think it's, you're going to get Westerman for an entire training camp, an entire offseason, and he's probably, you think, he'll be better acclimated to the team. He'll be a much more well-rounded and he'll just be a better performer. You know Ted Laurent, what he can do. Jagger Davis was an excellent signing that people around the league have been going crazy about since he signed here. And now you add Wynn to the mix. This is a very dangerous defensive line that might not have to rely on. Like, Ticats blitzed a lot last year. They might not have to – with those four guys, like, who are you going to double on the interior? Because if you double Laurent, you leave Wynn one-on-one. He's going to beat you. You double any interior guy, you're going to leave either Davis or Westerman open one-on-one. Like, that's – There's no one you can double team and not still have someone get to the quarterback. So I look at this move as being kind of the last piece of the puzzle, sort of, to make this defensive line as fearsome as it can be.
Yeah, and you look at the defense overall, you take a look at the linebackers, and maybe, you know, we've been weakened a bit in that particular area. But then you look at the defensive line, and I think it's going to be tremendously improved. So, you know, you take one thing for the other, and I personally, I know that the linebackers are very important, and the, you know, there's coverage that they have to do, but I just want a defensive line that can get after the quarterback. It's been too long since we've had a real, you know, ferocious defensive line that puts the fear in other offensive lines. So, you know, if we're going to trade off the linebacking core for the defensive line, I'm okay with that.
Same here. I think you can find linebackers. I think now replacing Don Unamba at Sam is going to be difficult, but I think they have some in-house guys. I've wrote some training camp previews for the Ticats, one on the offense, one on the defense. They'll be coming up on 3 down shortly. I think this team has options at Sam. And look, no disrespect to Larry Dean, but Larry Dean was an unknown guy who was replacing Taylor Reed, who was an unknown guy, they had Ray Williams, they had Otis Floyd, Jamal Johnson played. Like, this team has been able to find linebackers. They have a couple guys, Lucas Waka and Chris Frey are two guys that people have to pay attention to. They signed Justin Tuggle, who's probably going to get the first shot at being the team starting middle linebacker. Finding linebackers and finding running backs are the two things the Hamilton Ticats have always been able to do, even in the leanest of years. They were able to find guys. Terry Cauley is a name that I always remember. Trey Smith was a guy who had a couple of games, but really looked like finding guys in the linebacking core and finding guys at running back has not been an issue for this team at any point over the last 20 some odd years. So yes, losing Dean, losing Unamba sucks. they can be replaced. Upgrading the defensive line at the expense of losing the linebackers, I'll take that every day of the week.
Yeah, and you speak of the options, you know, I almost totally forgot that we got Rico Murray back. So
bingo.
You know, Rico Murray, and then we got that young Bennett kid who I know that you're high on just because of his name.
I remember. I love Jackson Bennett. I think he's the guy that can play Sam. And don't forget about the guy we got from Calgary, Tunde Adeleke, another guy that can play Sam or can play safety. This team has options is what I'm saying. And like you, just like you said, upgrading the defensive line at the expense of the linebackers is a move I would make any day of the week.
Yeah, and we got depth on that offensive line, our defensive line, sorry.
Yep.
You know, you look at your defensive end, we got Tracy, Westerman, McGough, Davis, Hauser, and then in the middle, you got Wynn and Laurent and Vaughn and the young kid Wade. So there's a lot of depth. They can rotate through and not miss a beat. So, yeah, I'm taking a look at this defensive line, Josh, and I'm getting a little bit excited.
Well, and you list some of those names. Justin Vaughn has starting experience. Julian Hauser has starting experience. Adrian Tracy has a ton of starting experience. Connor McGough was a first-round pick, and it's probably time for him to see what – that's probably one of the reasons, and we're kind of jumping the gun here, that the team cut Justin Capicotti. It's time to see what the former fourth overall pick in the draft can do on defense. Like, this team has Canadian depth along the defensive line, have guys in backup roles that have started in this league, and then a guy like Tracy started some major, major minutes in this league. And then you look at the starter. There's a lot to be excited about this defensive line as we head into training camp. And it kind of all coalesces with the signing of Dylan Wynn. Dylan Wynn kind of – this would have been a really good defensive line without Dylan Wynn. It has the potential to be a great one with him added to the mix.
I totally agree. We've been high on the defensive line in past years recently, but I think this time it's going to be the real deal.
I think so too. So I brought up the Capicotti cut. Let's talk about that. Ticats cut a slew of players. We won't get into all of them. I was a little surprised that they released Terrence Plummer so soon after signing him, but that's the way the ball bounces sometimes. But there's three big ones. And I think these are the three ones we'll kind of focus on most. Nikita Whitlock, Justin Capicotti, and Alex Green amongst all the cuts. It's weird with Whitlock and Green especially because they just recently signed contract extensions, so it's kind of strange to see them go. But clearly the team was moving in a different direction. Capicotti was just a little bit of a surprise because he's a Canadian guy, but getting paid sort of starters money to be a backup player and not really contributing all that much. As much as I like him as a player, I feel like those couple years he had in Ottawa where he looked unstoppable might have been more of an outlier than we were led to believe. But I'm sure, you know, with a Canadian passport, someone will pick him up. And obviously these three amongst this group of cuts were all pretty surprising. Did one surprise you more than the other?
Just from a personal standpoint, I was surprised that they got rid of Green. I look at it now, I was going to say, you know, before Jones, I was thinking of saying on the podcast, you know, I was surprised because June Jones is a really loyal guy, and I know that Alex Green is his dude, you know, but since he's gone, I guess it kind of makes sense. Now, I know they have depth at their running back position. They got Sean Thomas Erlington, who's, you know, a very talented Canadian running back. They signed Cam Marshall in the offseason as well, who I also like. But yeah, from a personal standpoint, I'd have to say Green. But I was also surprised at the other two. You know, you got a guy that's like two-way Whitlock, I like to call him, who can play on both sides of the ball. You know, you line him up as a fullback, and he can play, and he plays defensive line, obviously. But three very talented guys that I believe will be signed somewhere else in the CFL or, you know, in another league maybe.
So there is something I want. The Green, like all three of them, kind of were surprising seeing these names on a list. I don't think enough is being talked about with Whitlock because he played two pretty solid seasons with the Ticats. He was good on special teams. He didn't really get a ton of offensive reps after kind of a disastrous first outing. Last year, I think it was the beginning of last year, right? When he got the opportunity to start at running back, and it didn't work out. And then after that, you kind of didn't see him. You mentioned it, the fumbles. It wasn't meant to be. But I thought he played tremendously on the defensive line. I thought he did a great job on special teams. Like I said, Capicotti's a little bit of a surprise just because you don't really see starting caliber Canadians released, but is releasing Justin Capicotti a reason that they could go sign a Dylan Wynn? And if that's the case, you're signing a guy that can start versus a guy that's not going to start. I think you make that trade every day of the week, especially when they play somewhat similar positions. Wynn is more of an interior guy. Capicotti's on the edge. But at the same time, they both play the defensive line. The Alex Green, I've seen a lot of comments about, well, they released Alex Green, and they're going to make a ratio change, and maybe they're going to start a Canadian, because you mentioned Sean Thomas Erlington. They drafted Malik Irons. Two things about that that just no one seems to be talking about, and I really wish I would have written a piece about this for Three Down, but one, it's quite possible that the ratio for starting Canadians goes down to five anyway, and if you don't think the Ticats already have five starting Canadians ready, you haven't been paying attention to the roster, because I can name five off the top of my head without even thinking. They're three interior offensive linemen, Mike Jones and Ted Laurent. They're, boom, there's your five.
Yep.
They had seven if they need seven, because it's those five. Shamad Chambers can start if need be. Maybe they start a Sam. Jamal Westerman is a guy who's going to start. There's a Canadian. And they start a Canadian at safety. There's your seven. There's no reason to make a ratio change. You're not going to start Adrian Tracy over Jamal Westerman, in my estimation. No offense meant to Adrian Tracy. They don't have an American safety on the roster, so you're not taking Mike Daly off the field. I saw some people say, like, oh, this will be a way for them to get four Canadian or four American receivers. It'll be a way to get Braylon Addison on the field with Luke Tasker, Jalen Saunders, and Brandon Banks without making a ratio change. They can do that anyway. Now, they might go with a Canadian running back because of what they have there, but they don't need to. It's not like they have to flip the ratio in any way to get the guys they want on the field on the field. They already have seven or eight Canadian starters ready, and the starting Canadian ratio might go down to five anyway. So I don't understand where people are coming from with this.
Yeah, the one thing that the Ticats have immense depth in is obviously the Canadian talent, and that's, you know, that's a huge thing for any CFL team. So if there's five, if there's, you know, if the ratio goes up, which I know it won't, if there was eight, you know, you had to have eight Canadians, I would be comfortable with playing eight Canadians with this roster. So I don't think there'll be a ton of, maybe they'll start Marshall. You know, Cameron Marshall has had some pretty good experience in this league. He's shown flashes. I like the kid. He's a powerful running back. Maybe we'll see some of Cam Marshall starting at the halfback position.
I absolutely think Marshall is going to be the first guy to get a crack at starting, but I think we're going to see a heavy dose of Malik Irons when he gets up here, and I think we're going to see a lot out of Sean Thomas Erlington. And there's another guy on the roster. They have a little-known guy that they signed this offseason amongst a slew of other signings that they made. Ray Laurie is his name. He is the all-time leading rusher from Old Dominion. Like I said earlier, I mentioned Terry Cauley. I mentioned Trey Smith. Troy Davis is another guy that they found out of nowhere. This team has not had a hard time finding running backs. CJ Gable was not a known commodity when he came up here. Like, I knew who he was because I used to play those old NCAA football games, and I remember him being on the USC teams. Alex Green was not a guy people knew before he stepped on the field with the Ticats. So this team has been able to – remember Siobhan Walker? There's another guy that they kind of unearthed out of nowhere.
Oh, wow.
Like,
yeah, I do remember him now.
Yeah, right? So it's like this team has not had a difficult time at any point in finding running backs. Ray Laurie could be a guy who right now we're not talking about all that much, could be a guy that sneaks in, steals a starting job because of what he's done as a collegiate and given a shot to play up here. But the Ticats have running back depth. They don't have to worry about the ratio. They're going to play whoever is the best, and I think they're going to play a lot of these guys. I think you're going to see – you're not – if – I don't play CFL fantasy because I think the way that it's run is kind of idiotic because I don't like the way it's done. If they still had Fantasy, we'd be playing it because we did before, and that was super fun. That doesn't exist anymore. I don't like the CFL game. That's neither here nor there. I would not draft a Hamilton Tigercats running back if I was playing CFL fantasy simply because I don't think there's going to be a bell cow. I think this is going to be one where they're going to throw all these guys out there at one time or another to create mismatches and what have you. So there's not going to be like an Andrew Harris type. Like, Cam Marshall might be the starter, but I think you're going to see a heavy dose of the two Canadian kids as well. So I don't know. I don't like, look, I'm like you, I'm bummed to see Alex Green go, but I don't think this team's going to have any problem finding production at the running back position.
No, neither do I. I think that, you know, all those guys have talent and you can plug any of them in. And you know, Thomas Erlington is a guy that showed great athleticism, and Cam Marshall is a little bit different runner. So, you know, you can have diversity at the running back position. Marshall's a little bit of a, you know, run into you type guy from what I've seen, and Erlington's more of a jump over you type guy. So, yeah, it should be an interesting season in the backfield for the Tiger Cats, I'd say.
So I brought up Malik Irons. I think it's time, Mike, for us to talk about the draft. We didn't do a draft preview show because outside forces got in the way of us being able to sit down and talk about what the Tie Cats might do, which is a good thing, though, because I did do a draft preview piece for Three Down Nation, and I did not nail any of these players that the Tie Cats picked. To be fair, John Hodges, our draft guy, and I kind of went off what he had said, but the draft is such a crapshoot. You don't know. I always think of when the Tie Cats drafted Brandon Revenberg, traded up at that to draft him third overall. He wasn't in the CFL's top 20. No one was talking about him. He started his rookie year. Last year, he was the East Division's nominee for the top offensive lineman, and he's been a stalwart. He made Peter Diakowski expendable and has been a stalwart on the offensive line ever since. You never know who's going to be good and who's going to be bad in the draft. So let's talk about the guys they picked and take our anything we say with a grain of salt, simply because you don't know who's going to perform and who's not going to perform. But from all the experts, and I talk about guys like John Hodge, I talk about guys like Marshall Ferguson, even guys like Justin Dunk, everyone's raving about the draft that the Hamilton Tiger Cats had, especially their first four picks. So with the second overall pick, they went and grabbed an offensive lineman from Waterloo named Jesse Gibbon, who also happens to be a Hamilton native. In the second round, they grabbed a fullback, or though he played slot back at York, but he's a special teams dynamo in Nikola Kalinic. In the third round, they went out and got the guy that the day before the draft, I saw a piece on our site that said many people viewed him as a Canadian Weston Dressler in Idaho's David Ungerer. And then, of course, with their fourth pick, like we talked about earlier, they nabbed Malik Irons out of Ohio. Their other picks, three defensive linemen, Sheridan Lawley from UBC, Derek Dufault from Manitoba, Malcolm Campbell from my alma mater, the University of Toronto, and they picked up St. FX linebacker Gordon White with their eighth and final draft pick. So the top four are the ones that everyone seems to be just raving about. Mike, they got an offensive lineman. They got a guy that everyone says is by far the best special teams player in the draft. They got a starting caliber running back in Irons, and they went after my favorite thing, which is a wide receiver. So what do you think? Were you as excited as I was when you saw the draft grades come in that had Hamilton at or near the top of everyone's who did the best in the draft rankings?
Yeah, absolutely. It's always good to hear that your team has picked well in the draft. I mean, we had, what was it, four picks in the first 22 or something like that.
Yeah,
so it was the same last year. They seemed to be just racking up the draft picks year after year, which is a great thing with our, you know, people that are picking our GM by committee. They do a great job every year, so I was not surprised, but I'm very happy about it. And you talk about a guy like Jesse Gibbon, kind of reminded me of the Revenberg pick, you know, kind of under the radar guy. He's not a monster in size. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a big dude, but from what I've heard, he's athletic. You know, he can get downfield on screen passes and make those blocks. So he kind of reminds me of Brandon Revenberg. And if he's, you know, three quarters or half the player that Revenberg is, we have a pretty good pick, I'd say.
I look at it as a whole, man. They grabbed an offensive lineman, which is something all the good teams like to do. They went and they grabbed another speedy Canadian receiver. They grabbed a guy who everyone says was the top running back in the draft. And they go and get a special teams demon, which, yeah, maybe the second round is a little high to grab a guy who's going to mostly play on special teams and, like, a York University student at that. Like, come on, guys. You grab a U of T guy, you can't be grabbing a York guy, too. Come on. Go get the guys that actually go to the smart school. They might be the better football school. But U of T is the much better academic school, and I will take that to my grave, and everyone else will agree with me anyway.
Well, yeah, their football team shows it too.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. People go to U of T to go to school, not to play dumb ball sports. Anyway, right. As I say on a football podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've said this time and time again, we are nowhere near experts when it comes to the draft. So I defer to the guys who put the work in. John Hodge, who works with us at Three Down, he is He's turned into one of the most sought after and respected draft analysts there is. He said these picks were pretty much all home runs. He loved all of them. He really was high on the Gibbon and Kalinic pick. So if they're good enough for Hodgie, they're good enough for me as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'll trust in him as well, because to be honest with you, I don't have a clue.
But you know what they did? Like, let's look at the Gibbon pick especially, though. Like, when they picked Darius Scirocco, people were saying Landon Rice is going to be the guy that starts. Scirocco started from day one. That's rare. Very, very rare for a Canadian draft pick to start from day one, no matter the position. You look at a guy like Gibbon, you can see they're planning for the future. Hodgie said in his draft analyst that Gibbon projects, he was a tackle in university, but he projects to a guard or a center in the pros. Okay, well, let's look at the team's offensive line. We know Scirocco's not going anywhere. We know Revenberg's not going anywhere. We like Mike Filer, but it took him a little while to sign him back for another year. He's only got on a one-year deal. I think you can kind of read the tea leaves here. You know what I mean? Like, okay, maybe they bump one of those guys inside, or Gibbon becomes this team's next starting center for the next decade or what have you. So I like that this team is planning ahead. I like that this team is not necessarily doing what, like, people are all, oh, they should do this or they should do that. They went off their board. And here's the thing that I think people have to recognize about the Ticats. The last couple of years, especially when they elevated Drew Alemang from scout to sort of – now he's in this co-GM role with Sean Burke. That dude knows the draft. This team has drafted extremely well over the last few years. We've talked about Revenberg. We've talked about Scirocco. We mentioned Sean Thomas. Sean Thomas Erlington was an eighth-round pick a couple of years ago. You look at the CFL draft and see what eighth-round picks do – he's probably had one of the best careers out of any eighth-round pick ever in the CFL already. Like, this team has found a lot of key players, some starters, some not, but guys that are contributing to this football team. And again, I expect a lot of these guys to, you know, they're not going to light the stat sheet on fire because they're rookies, but these are going to be guys that this year and in the next coming years are going to be major contributors to this football team. And that's all because Drew Alemang knows exactly what he's doing. The Ticats have been one of the best drafting teams of the last, like, half decade, and I don't expect that to end anytime soon as long as Drew's still with the team.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, if you want to look at the eighth-round pick this year, we got a linebacker from St. Avex. His name is Gordon White. So let's just keep an eye on him, see if he rises. You know, take a look at these eighth-round picks, see if, you know, we can find another diamond in the rough.
Hopefully we can. All right, Mike, that's it for Ticats news. Let's move on to some CFL talk. Not a ton for us to get into, but we do have to talk about one thing, and that is finally, officially, Ricky Ray has decided to end his career, retiring last week with the Toronto Argonauts. I think this is something that most fans, I hesitate to say wanted to see, simply because you never want to see a great player walk away from the game. You want to see him keep playing. But with the injury he sustained last year, with the Grey Cup victory the year before, and with kind of the injuries that have kind of piled up on him the last few years, I think fans are okay with Ray stepping aside for the betterment of his own health. What did you think of when you heard the news that Ray was walking away?
I think it was the right decision. You know, to come back at this point, not that I wouldn't like to see Ricky Ray on the field for maybe one more year, but on the other hand, you know, yes, he had the Grey Cup victory a couple years ago in Ottawa with the Argonauts, but I think his play was on the decline. I just didn't want to see him take another big hit like he did last year. And, you know, a couple years ago he was injured, and you just don't want to see those injuries pile up. So watching Ricky Ray play was, you know, he was one of the best that I've seen play in the CFL. So I think it was the right time for him to hang it up. And, you know, four championships, so many things he's done in this league. He will be obviously in the Hall of Fame one day, and I'm happy to see him go out before, you know, something terrible happened to him injury-wise.
So you said he's one of the best that you've ever seen play. Where this, and I know it's he's fresh, in his retirement, but he's one of the all-time greats. I don't think anyone will ever debate that. Where do you, you know, I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. Where do you kind of rank him all time? Where does he fall in your like all-time quarterback rankings?
Just the ones that I've seen play, Flutie's got to be number one. I would probably put Calvillo at number two. I know I'm probably forgetting some names here. You know, Danny Mac was one of my favorite, but I don't think he's, you know, one of the best of all time. I probably put him number three, maybe. I was a big fan of Dunnigan. Dunnigan's in the top five, but top three, I would probably go Flutie, Calvillo, and then Ray.
And that's, you're just ranking out on the ones you saw play. So Ron Lancaster's not in consideration.
No.
Russ Jackson,
no.
Sam Echeverry,
no.
Jackie Parker, guys like that. No. Yeah, I think that's fair. Dunnigan, I might be inclined to put Dunnigan ahead of him. You're right. With Flutie and Calvillo, to me, they're 1-2. Whatever order you want to put them in, I won't argue with you. I think Flutie was the single most dominant player I ever saw play. Calvillo's longevity, like that, there's the debate with those two, right? Is it the shorter career that was just pretty much always elite, or is it the guy who did it for 20 years at mostly the, like, how many Grey Cups did Calvillo play in over a 50? Like, what were they? I think they were 8 for 11 from like 2000 to 2011. Like, it's ridiculous the amount of Grey Cups that guy played in, winning 3 of them, of course. All time passing leader. Pretty much has all the records that you can think of in the CFL. So there's that. Damon Allen is a guy, like, he's a tough guy to rank too. You know what I mean? Like, do you put him up in the top? Cause he played a very, very long time, won a bunch of Grey Cups.
I put Dunnigan above Damon Allen.
Did you put Ray above Damon Allen? Like, I mean, you did,
yeah.
But I'm just bringing up names here.
I would.
Yeah, as much as I dislike him, Henry Burris has to be in that conversation too.
Yes, he does. I agree.
If we take in ranking the guys that we've seen, I think you've nailed it. I think if we go further back, I think Ray drops. I think you got to put a guy like Russ Jackson ahead of him. I think Ron Lancaster probably ranks ahead of him. Warren Moon probably also goes ahead of him. I know he's a little bit before our time, but I think I put him above Ricky Ray.
Well, Ray has more Grey Cups, but you know.
No, Moon has more Grey Cups.
Well, as a starter. Moon only started 3.
Moon only started 3, but he won 5. Ray started 4 and won 4. So, okay, I'll give you the starting ones. I'll give you that. But Moon did play in those other Grey Cup wins, so I don't
know.
But
let's be honest, Moon was a better quarterback than Ricky Ray.
I think so too. I do. But it's hard to kind of judge the guys that you never really saw play. My dad, Garcia. That's another interesting one too. Like, he started maybe, what, 3 years in the league, but they were – 3 really good years. Like, it's hard. And I'm discounting, obviously, I'm going to say that off the bat, I'm discounting guys who are currently playing. I'm not putting Mitchell or Riley or any of those guys in this conversation at all. It's strictly guys who are no longer playing.
Mitchell's not even in the top 20.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that. We're not here to debate Levi Mitchell's ranking amongst best quarterbacks of all time. But I think if you're talking about guys that – because you and I are of similar ages, so I think it's fair to say that guys in our lifetime, I think Ray's 3 or 4. I think it depends on how you feel about Henry Burris. I think Ottawa fans would probably put Henry Burris above Ricky Ray. I think a lot of other people probably put – maybe even Calgary fans would put Burris above Ray. I think everyone else kind of would have Ray above Burris. I think if you didn't cheer for a team that Burris played for, or you're not a Hamilton Tiger Cats fan, or you're not me – I think Burris's antics rubbed some people the wrong way. So I think that would lead people towards Ray. And I think Ray, you know, the 4-2 Grey Cup wins, I think, has something to do with that. But Burris won a couple of MOPs, and Ray never won those. So there's definitely a debate to be had between those two. I think I put Dunnigan ahead of him regardless. I think Dunnigan would be number 3 of the guys I watch play. Tracy Ham's another guy. Where do you rank Tracy Ham?
Yeah, Tracy Ham was a good... He wasn't a great passer, you know what I mean?
Like,
he was a dual threat quarterback. You know, it's an interesting conversation that's going on right now, right here. I like it a lot. But,
of course it is. It's there's no right or wrong answer, Mike. Like,
it's true.
And it's almost – this is why I hate when people say, oh, he's the greatest of all time, and we all get sucked
into – He's the boat.
Yeah, he's the best of all time. I don't like that discussion because how do you compare a guy like, let's say, Ron Lancaster, for instance? How do you compare Ron Lancaster when he played versus Mike Riley when he plays now? The games are played differently. There's Ron Lancaster threw a lot of – Danny McManus, another great example, threw a ton of interceptions. But he won a lot of football games, won a couple of Grey Cups, and like no one – the game was played differently. Is what I'm saying. And yes, you never wanted to turn over the ball, but there are guys like Ron Lancaster has a ton of interceptions. Maybe he's either the most or second most, I think, in CFL history. And if I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will check me on it, either on Twitter or in the comments section on Three Down. But ranking guys against other guys based on when they played is it's really, really difficult as far as I'm concerned to judge. You can judge them, I think, against their peers. And I like the way I like how you answered the question. You're like, out of the guys I've seen play, I think that's a really good – because how do you and I sit here and say that Anthony Calvillo – or we'll use Ricky Ray because that's who we're talking about. How do we say Ricky Ray is a better quarterback than, say, Jackie Parker or Sam Echeverry or Tom Clements or Dieter Brock? Like, how do we – we never saw them play, so we can't judge the – like, it's really, 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 really hard. So I try to, like, avoid the whole goat-boat debate and just focus on – look, man, we were lucky. Ricky Ray came into the CFL, and I believe it was 2002, and he played pretty much phenomenal football from that day until the day he walked off the field for the last time. And I don't mean to sound glib, but I guess he didn't actually walk off the field the last time. He was carted off, and that's hopefully that's not the image that we remember of him.
No.
Four Grey Cups, constantly at one of the best quarterbacks in the league, through one of the prettiest corner routes that you'll ever see. Like, Ricky Ray is legitimately one of the greatest players this league has ever or will ever see, and we got lucky enough to see his entire career. As much as I don't want to rank him, even though we did, I think we should just celebrate the fact that we got to watch him play.
Yeah, absolutely. He was you know, one of the best corner route guys, corner route quarterbacks I've ever seen before. You know, you don't really remember quarterbacks by like routes, you know what I mean? But he's one of those guys that you remember by throwing that corner route. And you think of a guy like Dunnigan, you think of his arm, but you think of a guy like Ricky Ray and you think of precision passing, you know what I mean? He didn't have a cannon of an arm, but he put it the ball where it needed to be, and a very intelligent player as well. So he was one of the best for sure.
Look, we're a couple of Ticats fans talking on a Ticats podcast effusively about an Argos quarterback that won two Grey Cups in the last 6 years, and we're not calling him names. That tells you how much respect Ricky Ray has among CFL fans and why we all think he's one of the greatest to ever play the game. I would like to use this opportunity, though, to share a story about Ricky Ray. I'm not sure if I've ever shared this on the podcast before, but I believe it was 2011 when Edmonton was in town. He was still with Edmonton at the time. Edmonton was in Hamilton to play the Ticats, and my brother was working at the Art Gallery of Hamilton in downtown Hamilton at the time and was walking from work to his apartment and was walking behind a guy who he was like, man, this guy's really, really tall. And so he keeps walking by him. He saw him come out of Jackson Square, which anyone who knows Hamilton knows where Jackson Square is. Saw him walking out of Jackson Square with like a bag full of magazines. I guess he was looking for something to read. So my brother's like walking by this guy. He goes, man, he looks awfully familiar. And they stop at the corner together, and he looks at him, and he takes a step forward, and he looks back, and he turns to him, and he goes, you're Ricky effing Ray. And Ricky Ray looks at him and goes, yes, I am, and shook my brother's hand. Now, obviously, my brother didn't say effing. My brother is a dirtbag Hamiltonian, so he actually said the F word. But to me, that's such a great sort of like – he's so – like this is sort of, again, part of the greatness of Ricky Ray. He's so nondescript that my brother only recognized because like, this dude was really tall. And he seemed really tall to be a guy who would be walking down the street. I'd never see someone this tall. I guess Ricky Ray is like 6'4", 6'5". He's a pretty big dude. And my brother's really? Not – yeah, my brother's not – well, I mean, that's what my brother said, but my brother's really short. My brother's like 5'7". So he could have been like 6'2", and my brother would have thought he was a giant. but, yeah, like he just he's literally walking down the street, Ricky Ray is, with a bag of magazines that he got from the store inside the mall because he wants something to read before the game. And my brother just looks at him and goes, you're Ricky effing Ray. And he goes, yes, I am. Like, how cool is that?
Yeah, that's – that's so CFL.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have a similar story with Dave Dickinson, actually. It was the 2007.
Oh, shit. There's another guy we never even brought up as one of the best quarterbacks ever. Dave Dickinson.
Right. And I loved him when he played. He was so precise in his passing. You know, his completion percentage, I'm sure, is through the roof. But, yeah, it was 2007 Grey Cup, and I was at one of the festivities during the afternoon, and I was wearing a Dickinson jersey, a Calgary one, and he was in BC at the time. And he walked up to me and said, I missed that number. And I was like, holy crap, Dave Dickinson. So that's just the kind of interaction you have with, you know, with CFL players who are more down to earth than your average, you know, pro sports player.
Well, come on. The Zach Evans story that I shared from Grey Cup week, like, that's the type of stuff you get at Grey Cups. And it's something that before I went to a Grey Cup, I didn't really understand, didn't really care about, but now I can see it's pretty cool. And with Ricky Ray walking off for the last time, I just thought I'd share that story because every time I think of Ricky Ray, I think of that. And every time I see my brother, maybe not every time, but anytime we're watching like a CFL game or Ricky Ray comes off, I was like, remember that time you swore at Ricky Ray? he came home, like he literally called and said, like, you're like the next time he phoned my dad and was like, you're not going to believe what just happened. Next time I saw him, he was like, you're not going to believe what happened. He told it was just what a wonderful, funny, great story. And just, again, shows you the type of person. Ricky Ray, man of the people. Guy can say you're Ricky effing Ray to him, and all he goes is, yes, I am. Like, that's just super cool. What a cool dude. You don't think of cool and Ricky Ray in the same sentence. That was pretty cool.
No, you definitely do not. He just, he just seems like a laid-back, nice guy.
That was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw. Actually, I'm at M-Bone. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.